That's so true.
It is recording.
So true. We're recording now.
So welcome back to All Good in the Brotherhood, a little podcast from the Benedict Project. This is Nate Whitaker. My brother Francisco is not here today, nor is my brother Tom. But today I'm having a local homie on, Mark Armour.
Yeah.
The guy actually...
Yeah. Let's go.
We just dap each other up.
You heard that dap.
That was pretty clean, actually. Nice acoustics here. So, yeah, he's a homie that I grew up with.
Yeah.
We've hung out over the years doing
lots of
wild stuff. Yeah. What's a recent wild thing you've done?
I have some friends that bugged me. We had this plan for a couple of days, but they're like, when was it? Yesterday they bugged me.
Okay.
Which was like out of the blue. They were complaining about the tap water here where we live.
The tap water in our town is gross.
It's okay. I've always grown up drinking it. I just don't care.
Yeah.
So I never have complained. I've never gotten the complaints. I don't get the complaints about most tap water. It's just fine.
That's fair. Not a big thing. It does taste a little bit like pool water, though, sometimes.
I know, yeah. But, like, I also don't care. But regardless, they live in, like, Maryland and Virginia. And so they – Maryland, West Virginia. They, over break, spring break, they're college students. They went home. They collected tap water from both their hometowns, and they collected spring water from which they drank, you know, around, you know, day-to-day basis. I collected tap water from my hometown. We have it. And then I went down to this place in the woods where our family has a property. It's kind of been in the family a while, and we have, like, two different springs, and I got spring water. So we had a taste test. It's like this very, it's like a, imagine like wine tasting, but it's just all water. The most homeschool wine tasting you've ever seen.
So, I walked into your apartment. It looked like you had a flight, like the sort of flight you get at a bar, but it's all just, I was like, what is in that?
Yeah, I know.
And it's all just water.
Yeah, it was all water. We numbered all the glasses. We arranged, it took me so long. We arranged them from best to worst.
Okay.
And then.
Multiple of you judged?
Yeah, all three of us judged. We didn't know how the numbering. One of us knew how the numbering was.
Yeah,
I think our spring water locally won.
Best.
I really liked the tap water here in Grove City, and both of them hated it. So, yeah.
I gotta say, I actually don't mind it either. It just depends. It definitely has plenty of flavor.
Everyone complains about it. Everyone at the college complains about it. Yeah. So, like, and that's, you get people from all over at the college,
right? No, it's universally complained about. Definitely rough to shower in. It feels like you can feel the hardness of the water. But
if you say so, I would know. I would not know.
That's my take.
I don't shower.
That doesn't surprise me. So Mark actually, no, I'm just kidding. Mark lives in what he calls the Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Oh yeah, that's right.
If any of y'all are familiar with the Barbie movie, but it's also on Google Maps. Tell us about
it. Yeah. So I graduated school just recently.
There's a pretty well-known Christian college in our town, Grove City College.
Yeah.
It's well-known in the conservative community.
Yeah, good. It's a very good Christian conservative college. Mm-hmm. Not a Catholic college, so some of our other circles, you know, don't really consider it. But it's really great. So, yeah, I graduated. I'm now an engineer working, and so my parents told me, hey, it's time to move out. I moved in with a friend of ours, Mitch.
Actually had Mitch's dad on the podcast, Dr. Kangor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mitch, God bless, thank God, is on multiple levels. He has been accepted to go to the Dominicans.
Oh, yeah.
He's joining up, but he sort of needed a
place.
He's
got
on
multiple levels.
On multiple levels. I'm rooming. Me and him moved in together.
Yeah.
He needed a place for like a year because he didn't know what was going on with this. He got accepted. So he has all of the degrees in terms of if you were going to join the Dominicans. So he's a... he majored in philosophy. He got a master's degree in theology at Steubenville. So now we're living together. We decided to do like this campus ministry thing for the college students, and it was just sort of like a thing for us to fill our time, our evenings, and kind of we were so involved with the college, we knew so many people. And I did Newman Club. I was the president of the Newman Club chapter.
While you were at Grove City
College. I was at Grove City College. So okay. It was sort of just a pretty easy continuation of what we were kind of both doing. So we did that. And one of the older students...
Well, your apartment, I mean, you guys did the campus ministry for the sake of the students and doing a lot of the activities on campus, like nightly Compline.
At
the campus chapel.
That's been great,
That's been awesome. But I think what maybe I didn't anticipate is that a lot of the campus ministry events, or just a lot of the Catholic students in general from campus, have gravitated to your apartment.
It's
about a block from campus.
So that's a little bit separate, or at least we'd like to keep it a little bit separate.
Right, but it
happens. From the ministry, it happens. So the older students that we're friends with, it was kind of a separation, right? Like we like the kids who were doing campus ministry with, the students that we're doing campus ministry with are great. But there are, you know, some that are like a little bit more closer to our age, so a bunch of seniors that we just know we're just friends with.
Right.
So they like to come over, they like to leave the dry campus to come to our apartment.
Yes, Grove City is a dry campus.
Yeah. No alcohol drinking allowed on campus. I don't know why I brought that up, but they like
why did you lead with that? It's crazy.
It's like completely unrelated to them coming to our apartment. Anyway, no, they just like to hang out.
Yeah.
Long story short and interesting. One of our friends, he is actually converting to Catholicism, but he came over and we're like kind of, you know, at one point I'm like, hey, have you seen Mitch's room lately? This is like when we were first moving in. He says no. I show him Mitch's room. At that point, he had, again, recently moved in. He had like all of his theology books for work that he had just in a pile. He had like a pile of like clothes that he had just moved from his house, and he had a mattress, and then he also had the staple icon corner.
Right. Okay. So icons, theology books, a mattress, and clothes.
Yeah, and that was it. So
men will have that as their room.
So yeah, men,
no problem.
Men will look at this and see no problem with it.
Yeah,
because there is no problem with it.
What else do you
need?
That's
peak masculinity. He is just on the Dominican grind set.
Exactly, and as long as you have some chocolate milk in the house and maybe some other sources of protein, some red meat,
red meat,
good. That's all you need.
Yep, beer and booze. That's all. I mean, just the beer, just the
booze, booze of all.
Did I say beer? I meant beef.
Yes, there you go.
Anyway,
the bare necessities.
Our friend, well, the end of the story is our friend saw that and thought it looked way too much like a monastic cell. Mm-hmm. He changed our house's Google Maps listing to be a monastery.
And it got accepted by Google.
And Google thought that was okay.
You can actually look it up.
The pictures are straight up just like a church in Pittsburgh. It's not even a monastery. And the people at Google, in their all-knowing wisdom, thought that that's a small town monastery, the Pittsburgh church.
It's called the Most Holy Family Monastery.
Most Holy Family Monastery. Okay. Do not to be confused with a rather
radical
group of quote-unquote monks that have a Most Holy Family Monastery in
somewhere else in Pennsylvania, right?
In New York.
Oh, New York, okay.
I think.
Okay, so y'all's kind of a parody of
Don't look up their blog. Their blog is not our blog. We do not endorse.
We do not endorse sedevacantism.
Yeah.
Not a vibe. So yeah, so you guys have that. And that's actually why we have you on the show today, is because our podcast more and more has been focusing on monasticism. And so since you yourself are a monk.
At a monastery.
And founders of a monastery, we thought it would be very necessary to bring you on the show. No, actually, I wanted more to focus on the campus ministry that you mentioned, and just ministering to college students. So in your experience of going back a few years to when you were Newman Club and now, you know, being graduated, but still assisting with those services and helping bring prayer and some campus ministry activities to students.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience been like? What do you see college students wanting?
Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of different experiences. I was in Newman Club. I sort of joined the officer group and helped out with that like pretty early on in college.
Mm-hmm.
So I had like 3 years of that, and now I'm like almost done with another whole year, whole school year of this campus ministry thing that we've been doing. And it's been different kind of depending what groups you get. You have people that leave, you have people that, you know, freshmen come in, and you know, so the groups are different. So the ministry, I think, should be different. It has been different. I've had different levels of success, like people being interested, people sort of not being as interested. And I've had to change strategies a couple times, I guess, or we've sort of changed up what we're doing. So, yeah, it's sort of up and down.
What do you see people being more likely to gravitate towards if you've had to adapt?
Like, yeah,
what
yeah.
Changes?
Well, yeah, like I said, it just depends on who's there and who's interested.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot, like, we've done night prayer, like you've mentioned, with this campus ministry stuff, and we were really happy to have a lot of students really happy with that, interested in that. And that's been great, like, because it's a simple thing. You can, you know, compline, you know, you can look it up, me and Mitch both.
It's very short.
It's short, but it has been a big blessing because it's a short thing. But it brings a lot of structure to your day. I mean, Liturgy of the Hours is just sort of almost by definition brings structure to your day.
Exactly.
But just having that at the end of the day and having a set thing that you go through and sort of end your day with God,
mm-hmm.
that's been great. I've always found it attractive. A lot of students have found it attractive. So that's been a success.
One thing that strikes me is really cool about that or any other prayer involving the Liturgy of the Hours is that it's fairly ecumenical.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all based on the Psalms or other portions of Scripture. So, like, at a college that's not fundamentally Catholic, I could see it drawing in students that aren't Catholic. Yeah.
Now, traditionally, we have the hymn to Mary at the end.
Sure.
We usually sing the Salve Regina.
Mm-hmm.
We've invited quite a few non-Catholic students to join us, and we've sort of like we warn them ahead of time, like, hey,
we're gonna worship Mary.
We do this. We're gonna worship Mary
because we got to.
That's just what we do.
Yeah.
No,
Catholics do. No,
we do not. I do sometimes crack that joke a little bit. You gotta have a sense of humor.
Yes.
But no, we don't worship.
Have you ever like made a joke about something Catholic and then somebody take it seriously? Whether it be a Protestant or just
okay, I had this one moment. It's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
I made, this was really bad. I was at this like family camp.
Yeah.
In, you know, it was like a, it's not, it's Christian, it was Christian, not specifically Catholic. And you know, I'm there. A lot of people go, a lot of the same families go every year at the same time. So it's like, a lot of us know each other, but there was one guy who was sort of new. His dad was actually like speaking that week. It was like a week long thing. So usually all the like older kids, it was years ago. So yeah, we were still kids. We usually hang out like late into the evenings. I come in one day to like the rec hall and you know, I'm goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you are.
There's, Kyron. Yeah. Kyron was his name.
Not a Catholic kid.
He was not Catholic.
Okay.
Who was the Catholic? I forget her name. Anyway, I walk in. He's talking to some Catholic girl that I knew she was Catholic. I walk in. He mentions something about like her being Catholic. And I just walk in and I'm just like, ugh, Catholics, disgusting. And he just looks at me with this look of horror. That would be bad. He didn't know I was Catholic.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, dude, you can't. They're not.
It's insensitive.
Like, it's just. He looks at me, and I look at them like, I'm Catholic. I'm kidding.
I'm allowed to say it. Yeah.
That was. He took me seriously for a good like 5 seconds.
That's funny.
Until I explained, and he had the most awful look of horror on his face.
Okay, this is a little bit of a tangent, but what do you think is one of the wildest beliefs that we have as Catholics?
The wildest. I have talked with a lot of Protestants about a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
in my experience, the hardest, I think this is basically what you're asking. The hardest thing for Protestants to work with is the devotion to Mary. It's in a way, it's ingrained into our faith on like a cultural level.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're not required. The church doesn't require you to have a devotion to Mary.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like this it's a difficult thing for a lot of people because it's not like some people just temperamentally aren't drawn to that. Mm-hmm. It's a devotion. You're drawn to certain devotions, and different people are drawn to different devotions, different saints. And, you know, Mary is the greatest saint. So obviously the most amount of people should be drawn to her.
Right.
You know, hopefully it would make sense if that was the case, but you have people that aren't. So I was talking with one guy who was like heavily considering converting. In fact, I'm going to see him tomorrow or in a couple of days. I'm going to have to check in on him. But I was talking with him, and he actually said that was his hang-up.
Interesting.
The papacy, it was like kind of reasoned out. And
the Eucharist, how was that?
The Eucharist, he was on board with the Eucharist.
Wow.
But the Mary stuff was sort of like, I'm not so sure about that. And obviously, the papacy declaring the Mary stuff. And he was also like, you know, and there's like levels. There's like the emotional level to things, mm-hmm. as well as the logical level. So like logically, he was kind of there.
Yeah.
But he was just, you know, he's just like, do I have to, like, what do I have to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, and he like, I was like texting him about this a little bit. And yeah, he sort of like side texted me as part of a different conversation. And we're talking and like, yeah, but I sort of just explained to him like, hey, you know, you don't have to have devotion, like it's not required, but you do have to. And we're just talking about like what would be required, like if you are in a group of Catholics and they start saying the rosary, if you're not okay with saying the prayers, then there's some theological thing, there's an issue. But like,
well, also, I mean, you are required to believe what the church teaches about Mary, which involves a lot more devotion in itself than Protestant beliefs,
like
her perpetual virginity or that she's conceived without sin.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he was, like I said, he was sort of there, but he was just worried about, like, do I have to have a personal devotion? Do I have to pray, mm-hmm. like, a lot
mm-hmm.
to Mary? And, like, I sort of was like, no, well, actually, you know, my dad's a convert. So, and he actually, you know, he's told me, I can sort of see it, but, like, he just doesn't really have a strong devotion to Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact, I've heard lots of people say that, like, converts are oftentimes, like, they get the Mary thing and it clicks, and then it's like, I have such a strong gung-ho devotion to Mary.
Yeah.
Or it's just this thing that's sort of like uncomfortable for them. They're just like, this is mm-hmm. culturally different from what I'm used to. And so I just told them it's sort of fine. But that's what I'd say is the biggest thing for converts or people looking at the faith is there's a cultural element to that mm-hmm. that's sort of different. And that's harder than I think the doctrines, because you can't like logically give them a case that they have to, because they don't have to.
Because what he's putting into words there is ultimately like a feeling in his gut that this feels idolatrous. Even if intellectually you can separate it and recognize that veneration is different, there's still this feeling.
Yeah.
I think particularly when you're saying it's harder for converts, I'd be willing to bet it's harder if you're from a Protestant background. Like if you're from a different religion altogether or an atheist, I think I could see it being easier. But converting from a very Jesus-focused denomination.
Yeah, and being taught that, like, oh, you have to spend, like, the most time or that the reason that Catholics worship Mary is because they spend more time praying to Mary or something like that or any of these things. I think part of it's just sort of not being used to it.
Yeah.
But being so used to all the other parts of, I mean, you know, most of the other parts of the faith, just, like, the basics, mm-hmm. prayer and church on Sundays and reading scripture and sort of just not being used to the Mary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it even like without the doctrine stuff. But yeah, it's sort of, you know, it's new.
Right.
It takes a little getting used to.
I'm glad you were there to some extent maybe calm his worries or show him what was actually necessary, because I think sometimes zealous Catholics can do some disservice in evangelization by presenting things that are recommended as if they're required. You know what I mean? Like, and it's good because, you know, there's plenty of Catholics out there who with a deep devotion to Our Lady. They love, say, consecration to Our Lady, or they love the rosary. But then when they're talking to somebody who's thinking about becoming Catholic at all, it's sometimes tempting to promote things like the rosary or devotion to Fatima or whatever, as if it's equally on equal footing with believing in the Eucharist or believing in the papacy, you know? So, and I think that does a disservice because you have to recognize, like you said, some of that is cultural.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's like temperaments of different people. Like you have, you know, you have a personality, so you have certain things that not only do you have a personality, you have gifts, different gifts, and you have different vices that you're sort of especially tempted by. Mm-hmm. And that means that there's sort of going to be different saints that you relate to, either like personality wise or the vices that you need help with or the virtues that you are increasing in and look up to the different saints in. So yeah, there's different things.
Yeah. Now, in working in campus ministry, but also just being a young person who just graduated college, what's your experience been of the traditional factor in young students?
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, like, we hear this more and more that young people are trending back towards tradition, and a lot of them having an interest in Latin Mass. And have you seen that? Like, what is?
Yeah, we had a lot of students. We had a couple. We got like a nice friend group, sort of started, and that's always great to have in a ministry thing because, like, ministry, you want to sort of draw people closer to the faith, but it's the fraternal element.
Mm-hmm. You need
friendships. You need friendships in there, and friends are gonna get each other sort of back. Whenever, you know, you come there, you go, you come back, they're going to get people to, you know, more people to come in. They're going to provide some accountability and also just like the kind of human level of they're going to make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but all that said, like, we got a good friend group. We had a couple non-Catholics that were like heavily considering. They were sort of like beginning to start RCIA, some of them were on the edge about RCIA. So we had a couple of those, and we did a trip at one point. We even didn't plan it as the main thing. We were planning to go to a trip to locally in Pittsburgh. We have like the largest or like second largest collection of relics outside of the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy. There's like this chapel that there's a priest that collected all these relics. He was sort of part of a wealthy family and became a priest, and he was from Europe, and he collected all these relics from these wealthy families in Europe during the World Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many relics. You can't keep track. There's like booklets. You have to look them up alphabetically or like by reliquary. They have like an alphabet system. It's crazy.
Unreal. Yeah. If you live in the Pennsylvania area or near Pittsburgh, it'd be totally worth making a pilgrimage and venerating the relics because, yeah, it's, like you said, second biggest to the Vatican.
Do you have a devotion to a saint?
Any saint.
Any saint. I mean, you know, within reason.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's so many saints. We're doing a pilgrimage there, and then we, just as a side thing, we say, like, hey, you know, there's this Latin Mass parish in there, Institute of Christ the King. We'll just go to the Mass there. It's a beautiful Mass. And I don't think we even like really explained to people like
what it is.
I mean, yeah, what it is, or like that you're going to have to use missiles or something. We sort of did that on the ride over, but we take two car rides down. They all loved it. They all loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so you have some people that, oftentimes they go to Latin Mass. They're like sort of what's going on. I don't know. It's hard to keep track of sometimes, but they all loved it. It was great.
I think it can sometimes be easier for converts
to
adjust to it than to people who have gone to the Novus Ordo all their life.
Yeah.
Because they almost don't know what to expect, so it's like, okay, well, Catholic Mass of any kind is going to be new to them.
And there's one guy who was Lutheran. He's a great guy. And he was Lutheran, grew up Lutheran, and he sort of was, he's now like in RCIA joining the church. Thanks be to God. He loved the reverence. He came from obviously Lutheran's a little bit more of a liturgical background. So that just, like, you know, hit close to home for him. He loved that. Yeah, we had a lot of Catholic students that, you know, they loved it. So, yeah, people, I think the big thing with, like, the traditional element and, like, what people want something that's, like, real, that has meat to it. Because we were doing that. We're doing night prayer. We're doing it with chanting. But, like, it's sort of, it's there's a sense of identity there. There's a sense of culture there. Those aren't really part of the faith. Those aren't, like, necessary parts of the faith.
Well, not that they're not really part of it, but they're not, like, technically essential elements.
They're not essential elements. They're not, I mean, the culture part, they're not things we believe in. They're not really, but they develop alongside it. They enrich it. They're like a way of it being expressed more eloquently and in a deeper way. But they, like, young people especially, they in college, you're finding a sense of identity. And that is a sense of Catholic identity. That's like what the Catholic identity is. As Roman Catholics, like, that's sort of, you know, Latin's part of our Roman identity. Gregorian chant is part of sort of our Western church identity. And so,
even, quote unquote, the smells and bells, people always say, the smell of incense and the other aesthetic elements of the traditional mass, like, sometimes we diminish those by acting as if they're just something aesthetic, but they actually are ingrained in our Catholic culture. And and if you, like, I think you're right, if you want to become Catholic, or if you're interested in being Catholic at all, why settle for less than what our tradition has offered for years?
And, you know, just if you're a college student and you're already Catholic, it's, I think a lot of them like it because it's it's sort of like not the fullness. It's like, because, you know, the fullness of our faith really is in all the doctrines and in full communion and in the mass. But, like, it is full. It's rich.
Full grandeur.
And you want, when you're in college, you want that. You want you want to experience sort of, and you're finding out your identity. And so, there's a lot of things going on there. But, yeah, even, whether it's traditional or not, just something that's rich, spiritually meaty, cultural, those things are things that you can engage with, especially as a young person. And you're learning to engage with it, and that's, I think, what people are drawn to, and that's what has gotten people interested when I'm doing ministry, stuff like that.
That's wonderful. Yeah, you know, it struck me, I just thought of this in the metaphor of going to get food. If I wanted to go get Chick-fil-A, and I go to a Chick-fil-A store, and I'm all hyped to have a chicken sandwich with that good Chick-fil-A sauce and maybe a frosted lemonade. Sorry, I'm hungry right now. If I walk into Chick-fil-A...
You just ate.
And I know, I'm always hungry, bro. I'm serious. If I'm hungry for a chicken sandwich, and I walk up to the counter, and I look at the menu, and all they're offering is burgers, or, like, McDonald's food, or Wendy's food, I'm going to be disappointed. Now, Wendy's, for example, is not that bad, but, like, if I go to Chick-fil-A for Chick-fil-A, I want Chick-fil-A, you know?
Yeah.
And I think from the perspective of convert, approaching being Catholic could be kind of similar, where if you, like, have an idea of Catholicism based on history books or based on magazines you've seen of these Gothic cathedrals or based on pieces of Gregorian chant that you've heard maybe on Spotify, whatever.
Yeah.
You get these kind of aesthetic impressions of Catholicism. You don't then want to seek it out and then suddenly walk into a church and feel like you're in a Protestant church.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes, to be honest, some Catholic churches feel that way, whether it's architecturally, like the way they're designed. Our parish, to be honest, at home, the walls are very blank. It's a weird shape to the church.
Yeah, it's just unusual.
It's just unusual, and it feels in some way like a Protestant church. Or when you go in and you just kind of hear the same music you might hear in a Protestant church. It's not like they're all horrible things, but it's just if you want to see the beauty of the Catholic Church, you want it to look Catholic and distinctly Catholic. And I think that is what draws people in, especially converts, with the Latin Mass, is it feels like what they imagine Catholicism should look like.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes. We have a mutual friend that we both know, Kush. He was drawn to the Latin Mass originally, But he's since sort of like grown really to appreciate much more simplicity. Mm-hmm. So you'll have different sides of the same coin, I guess. Sure. So you'll have the there's a place as well though for simplicity. Simplicity isn't just being Protestant.
Yeah,
like that's not.
Yeah,
they're being trying to be aesthetically like Protestants, trying to.
The sermons to sound kind of generic Protestant.
The hymns, those get me. You don't,
dude. Some of the 1970s hymns in those hymnals,
just
kill me. Like on Eagle's Wings.
You're not gonna attract Protestants by having bad hymns.
Yeah, true. Yeah, because
they have good hymns.
If they want good music, they can go back to the church they probably came from.
I've had so many Protestants who have like gone to mass. They're like, even like if it's a nice, respectful mass. Like with sort of like a nice, the building seems like reverent, the architecture seems reverent, the priest could have a good homily, but they'll still be like, man, the music, that's not like I've had much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen much better. It's not oftentimes not the worst, but
yeah
they you can't
neglect it.
You can maybe beat Protestants on the hymn game, but you really need to go all in, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. Catholic identity, just full Gregorian chant. That's the only way you can
yes, dude,
one up them.
I'm all for Gregorian chant. Yeah, we can't beat them at their game.
Yeah,
we can.
I want to say it's their
win
game.
Win at our own game. What?
I don't want to say it's their game.
No, I'm not saying music in general is their game, but saying,
I know.
Like,
I'm kidding.
Oh, sorry.
I'm kidding.
Like generic contemporary Christian music, that is what. You can find other churches, and they do it a lot better. So what we do well is what we've done for hundreds of years.
Or as their, you know, proper ecclesiastical communities.
Is that, yeah.
Is that what people, but like that's sort of why it's contemporary music fits.
Right.
I think it's not, you know, they have a church, but it's not the same. You know, mm-hmm. it's an ecclesiastical community of believers. Their service is more contemporary. The nature, it's not. A ritual sacrifice of the mass. So you can manage some contemporary music, but it just doesn't fit at, you know, on Mount Calvary.
Yes.
It doesn't fit.
I think absolutely. And I think maybe that's one of the places where we can grow in our understanding of liturgy is looking at the mass, not as a ceremony, not as a meal, not as just a worship service,
mm-hmm.
but as the sacrifice of Calvary. And that demands a certain way of treating it, both aesthetically and in the way we pray there. You know,
solemnity.
Solemnity, exactly. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. So, yeah, I think this is really good because it's really important that we recognize this when we're trying to evangelize people. I think sometimes there can almost be fear that if someone is interested in becoming Catholic, we don't want to hit them with something too hard and too foreign to them. So we're like, well, let's ease back. Let's make it look a little bit more ecumenical. But I think it's good to recognize if people are interested in becoming Catholic, they probably want the fullness.
No, you should, you know, be ecumenical, but be ecumenical by just knowing and appreciating a variety of things and being able to explain things, but don't be ecumenical by sort of drawing back.
Yes.
You know, you have some prudence. You don't need to like barrage them with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Things take explaining and then they take a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
They often, and like I said, there's an emotional element too. Things take a little bit of an emotional amount of time. So, but besides that, I've always been sort of like, I've been pretty open with people. I've been pretty of the opinion that, you don't need to sort of cover up the doctrines of the faith. You don't need to make them look better. You don't need to, but you also shouldn't, like you said, push things on people. You shouldn't push the rosary on people.
Right.
You shouldn't push necessarily Latin mass, but like, don't be afraid of letting people into those things. Don't be afraid of like showing people those things because those are parts of our faith.
Yeah.
Just be genuine about it.
Exactly.
If you have a devotion to a thing and you share like your devotion.
Yeah.
And, you know, and always be a little bit careful with your own devotions because they're always going to like mean something very personal to you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just share them genuinely and just give you your own testimony,
yeah,
then people will realize, they'll see what's going on. And if you live your life as a witness, mm-hmm. to like that, that makes all that, that much more meaningful.
Yeah.
But don't be, you know, don't draw back and don't just say, well, I won't talk about this, or I don't want to, we don't want to mention that.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's within the, non-controversial, or, you know, bounds of truth and doctrine that the church sets for us, then yeah. don't be ashamed of it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. I think the key word you said in there was testimony. Like, share your testimony, be mm-hmm. a witness by your own life, and not forcing on the other person what you want them to believe, but just saying, here's what has been in my life. Here's the way in which Christ has worked in my life. Here are the devotions that I've found that have helped me draw closer to mm-hmm. Christ. And then let them see the beauty of that and draw their own conclusions.
Yeah. And yeah, everyone's going to be different. True. You know, you have to sort of meet people where they're at. You need to address what they're interested in and what they engage with. You'll have people that are interested in, you know, different kinds of spirituality. We have people that are interested in doing compline with us. We have people that aren't really very interested. Mm-hmm. We also have theological discussions that we host, is sort of our other big thing that we host occasionally. And so we have some people that just go to that and don't often go to compline.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some people that were like interested in knowing more about the faith on an intellectual level and engage with that. And then from there, they started joining in on compline and they sort of were drawn into
the prayer,
okay. More deeply from that. So you'll have, you know, you have lots of different kinds of people. And if we got a different group, we'd probably be doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
During Lent, we're doing Divine Mercy chaplets as well. So, yeah. And that's sort of different people are interested in that too.
Exactly.
So yeah, you gotta.
And what's great with that and compline is those are both short prayers.
Yeah.
Like, it's brevity is beautiful in a way. It doesn't have to always be a long, drawn out,
yeah,
regular thing, or it doesn't have to be like hours and hours once a week. It can just start with something small and consistent.
Yeah. And yeah, keyword start. I think, yeah. Like, it's, if you, the hardest part of prayer, in my opinion, and I'm sure many others, is making the commitment to sit down and start praying mm-hmm. at a regular time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, you know, part of the key to prayer. And so if you just start somewhere small,
mm-hmm.
you can just do, you know, night prayer before you go to bed. As well, if you do it at like a regular time and not just like as you're falling asleep, like,
yeah,
it will make so much more prayer, so much more easier,
mm-hmm.
more easier. But
I got what you mean.
You know, like, you'll sit down in adoration or something and you'll just start praying
mm-hmm.
and you'll be like, oftentimes if you're like me, you'll sit down and you're like, maybe I'll do half an hour or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I drove myself there. I can drive myself back. I can do whatever. And then sometimes you sit there and it's just like, I mean, I'm here and I'm talking with God and
mm-hmm.
you know, you get done with a rosary, you get done with sitting and just adoring Christ in the Eucharist. And, maybe you're sitting there like, I could go for an hour. Like,
yeah.
So,
yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I think with prayer and with a lot of other daily routines and habits, the law of thermodynamics is totally true, where you say like objects in motion tend to stay in motion.
Yeah.
Objects at rest.
Entropy.
Objects at rest tend to stay at rest. So
I'm thinking about something else.
Sorry.
No, you're right.
That's though. Newton's, I don't remember which law, one of Newton's laws.
Yeah. I'm a mechanical engineer.
Yeah.
I totally know which one.
I'm blanking, dude.
I don't know which one that is.
Yeah. I studied this at some point. It's whatever. But the point is still there that I think this applies to fitness. I think it applies to having order in your life. And I definitely think it applies to prayer. If you just start and you start moving, as it were, being an object in motion, it's easier to just keep going. Whereas if you're an object at rest and you're not praying, you're not setting aside consistent time for prayer, then it's going to be a lot easier to just keep in that bad habit of never praying.
We had to, I was blessed to be able to go to Mass today, even though it's just, you know, Wednesday and I have a job. And the priest there, he was giving this great sermon and it was on repentance. And he was talking about sort of the same thing where mm-hmm. like he was talking about how repentance isn't, you know, this flipping
yeah.
of a, you know, flipping on a dime, turning on a dime. it's a process. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, saying like during Lent, you can't say, well, I'm repented when I've changed my life and turned it around.
Yeah.
Like I'm repented when I stopped sinning. Mm-hmm. No, like you have habits, mm-hmm. and you have like either, whether it's, you know, habits for prayer or just kind of a lack of those habits, or you have a habits for sin, you can't just change habits. Mm. You have to, but you can't also sit there and say, well, I'm not there. I'm not where God wants me to be, mm-hmm. or like, I'm not worthy of God, or I'm not ready, mm-hmm. to, kind of check that box or whatever you have in your mind until I've done this thing, until I've like have a consistent holy hour, or right. until I've like actually broken this bad habit of sin. No, you go to confession. You start praying.
You start somewhere.
But you have to always keep coming back, and you're always going to need to keep coming back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both prayer, the big thing I think is the habit. It's the daily, like making it regular and making it daily and making it sort of just part of your day. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes. If it's part of your day, it'll make everything else so much easier. It'll ground the rest of your day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is such good news to remember that conversion is an ongoing process.
Yeah.
Because Christ, in every single present moment, offers us an invitation to draw into deeper intimacy with him. And so it doesn't matter what you were doing literally a moment ago. You mm-hmm. might have just sinned 5 minutes ago, but guess what? That's in the past. At this point, mm-hmm. you can say, I'm going to turn to Christ. I'm going to pray. I'm going to seek out his mercy. And I'm going to go forward like that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Except, you know, we learn from our mistakes. But the point is, like, every single present moment, from the time we wake up to the time we go to sleep, we can be continually working. Even if we stumble, we can continually work to get back on track and with God's grace. Yeah. So it's refreshing to me. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that, like, every single moment,
yeah.
you have the freedom to choose.
Think about it. Like, it's, if you're, so many times you have this, I mean, I have this, mm-hmm. you know, these thoughts of, like, well, even it doesn't matter if it's between me and God, or like sometimes between me and another person, like I have something I need to do for my dad. Mm-hmm. That's true. I have some stuff I need to clean up for my dad. But like, I it's so easy to think about it. I'm like, oh man, I've been putting that off. I've really messed up. Yeah. You know, I've really put that off to the side for a really long time, and then say, oh man, I just feel so embarrassed. I don't want to do it right now.
You don't
now.
Even want to face it now.
I don't want to face it now.
Keep the problem going, right?
Yeah, I just don't. I'm a procrastinator. I don't want to look at it.
Yeah.
But like with sin, like realizing and doing that, or even if it's not sin, even just like keeping up good habits or like growing in virtue, this, you know, thing that you've resolved to do that you haven't done, and not starting it because you're sort of unmotivated due to your past, like that's mm-hmm. you think about it, it's actually despair. Like you're despairing.
It is.
And even the little things, it's so easy.
Right.
You think you can hear despair as like this big thing, mm-hmm. but you realize that we despair little bits
exactly
so often,
and we do sometimes. I think because we get into the habit of looking at life as a cycle, where it's just another week. We know how last week went, so it's going to be the same as that.
Nothing ever happens.
Day. It's just another Monday. It's just another Wednesday. It's just another hour. And, like, we get used to seeing our failures mm-hmm. from the past. Or even if it's not failures, just our mediocrity. And assuming that the same thing's going to happen on repeat in an endless cycle. Instead of remembering, at any given moment, you're the youngest you're ever going to be again.
Yeah.
And it's every moment is a new moment. You're always kind of, I like to think of it as, like, you're always at the cutting edge of your own life. Mm-hmm. And the very extremity, and no matter what has happened in the past, even if it's the recent past, you have no way of knowing what God could be calling you into in this present moment. And so, like, we don't want to limit his grace. We don't want to limit confidence in him because of just our despair. Like
you're saying. And you know what is, I'm going to bring this around full circle. You know what helps with that, with cycles, with despair?
Booze. I mean, what? No.
Yeah.
My bad.
That's what I do every... I mean, never mind. No.
No, what?
Other people don't have that. And so, like, with ministry, with, you know, with whatever, with, mm-hmm. when Christ, with an encounter with Christ, Christ brings us out of these moments when we are open to encountering him, but mm-hmm. other people especially, whether it's invited or sort of other people inviting us, but mm-hmm. other people have a really huge power to encourage us and to help us build habits mm-hmm. in a way that's unencumbered by yeah. all these things that we've done, because they haven't done them. They're looking
wow.
But yeah, like I said, you have, I think that's a big thing with ministry, is that you want to focus on the little ways that you can help other people to build good Christian habits and grow in virtue, mm-hmm. just little by little. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter if it's just like a little prayer that you invite other people to say with you. And, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of courage to sort of go out there. I'm a little bit of an introvert. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes a little bit of, like, getting out of your comfort zone, overcoming embarrassment to, like, ask someone. But, I mean, you know, how cool would it be if someone just invited you randomly to go yeah. pray and you just did it? It's just 5 minutes. You say a prayer. You know, where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am. I'll also, you know,
right.
it's, communal prayer is meaningful. And then, you know, you wouldn't have prayed probably that at that time, at that day.
Yeah.
And now you have now. And if you make that a regular thing, now it's a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you show up for friends, mm-hmm. for friends that you can see in front of you. It's so much easier.
Exactly.
For Christ, it's harder.
Right.
We're separated by material things and the separation between the material and the spiritual, but
right.
But with people around us, we can encounter Christ through each
yes,
other.
Exactly.
And it just makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that power. I have that power.
Right.
Everyone listening has that power to like encounter people and just to make habits
and to build community with people around them.
Yeah.
You know, the word for communion where we encounter Christ is only one syllable off from the word community.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, you can do that. And what I love you pointed out is that doing that builds accountability for forming these mm-hmm. habits. I mean, yeah, it's just so fundamental that we think whenever we need to face forming habits or whenever we want to grow in discipline or grow in prayer or anything, we always think, because of our pride, that we need to start by doing it on our own. At least I do that.
Yeah.
I always start by thinking, okay, you know, it's a new year, it's a new day, and I want to grow in this or that virtue. How can I white-knuckle my way through it?
Yeah.
But that's not the approach. The approach is through, like you're saying, fraternity, community, mm-hmm. the support of other people, which is nothing other than Christ being manifested through other human beings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the gift of friendship, honestly. So, yeah, thanks for joining me,
Thank
Mark.
You.
This has been really chill. We're recording this pretty late tonight. We're both tired. It's actually 11:58 p.m., so.
Yeah, I have work tomorrow.
Yeah, I do too. But that'll be lit. So anyway, yeah, we should go to sleep.
Amen. Well,
thank you all for joining us.
Thanks,
Mark. This has been a lit time. And
absolutely.
Yeah, all of you, God bless. Have a good time with fostering community and growing closer with Christ.
Do it.
All right.
Get out there.